From modest beginnings in a basement apartment near the current location, Haley House has endured and blossomed. It was founded on a remarkable philosophy known as the Catholic Worker Movement, blending social service and personal spirituality. The movement originated among worker priests in Belgium and France and spread to the United States during the Great Depression. In the 1960s, it fired the imagination of Kathy McKenna, an idealistic student studying with Ursuline nuns at the College of New Rochelle, New York.
There was a lot of emphasis on developing one's intellect, but also with this particular group of nuns, there was a big emphasis on service. And they were pretty inspiring to those of us who met them. And just being involved in it and being exposed to that kind of approach to life, which was, to me, an integrated approach, where you take your religious perspective, your beliefs, and you transform them into a way of perceiving your surrounding environment and how you were going to interact with it. This was a new experience for me.
The Catholic Worker Movement approached social conditions like poverty, homelessness, and addiction as a community problem for which charitable people must take personal responsibility. So after moving to Boston, Kathy McKenna, along with a young school teacher who would later become her husband, embarked on a utopian adventure of service to the poor.
We really liked the idea of welcoming people into our home rather than into something that was more like an operation. So we did. We were lucky. We got this little apartment, 5 cots in the front room. John slept in the middle one, and 4 guys slept around him. And I had a mattress in the pantry because we didn't have a lot of food. And, of course, the hardest part was initially getting the guys to come, because although Tremont Street was truly a Skid Row neighborhood, and every night when we went out walking to invite people to come back, we were shocked that nobody accepted the invitation. I think they were afraid. Well, one night John went out and actually found someone who was unconscious in a snowbank and carried him home. So it was great. Tom woke up the next morning, got a great breakfast, got the royal treatment. You know, our first guest, we deluged him with all kinds of, you know, whatever we could muster. And of course, then he went out and spread the word. So from that point on, there was no other issue. We always had plenty of guests to stay.
In very short order, the number of indigent people showing up overwhelmed the physical capacity of Kathy McKenna's tiny apartment. There was no paid staff, and grocery bills were paid primarily by John's salary from school. But in the face of growing need, the couple decided to expand their shoestring service to a larger storefront facility nearby, which they opened that year with financial support from sympathetic friends.
We would have between 100 and 150 men squeezing into that space. And we were open from 7 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, 6 days a week. And in the morning, we always had coffee, usually had bread, and if we were very lucky, we had peanut butter. And when we served that, when people came in to eat that, they were incredibly grateful. And then at lunchtime, we'd have soup. And for many years in the early days, we were working with damaged cans, unlabeled damaged cans that were donated. And we got very good at figuring out what was in an unlabeled can, because there was always a price tag on them. And when you shook it and you heard liquid, if it was like expensive, it was probably a stew. If it was inexpensive, it was probably a soup. And if you shook it and there was no liquid, it was either hash or dog food, and you couldn't tell until you opened it up.